Israel. Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews, which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed toward Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, towards Jewish community institutions and religious facilities. Make sense? To me, it doesn't make sense. And it's kind of made me angry, actually, because anti-Semitism is a real phenomenon, and this definition makes a joke out of it. Let's focus just on the first sentence. Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews. Now, the following sentences, which may, and then it continues. May means a possibility. May or may not, if I may add. So let's just leave this, frame this part of the sentence as an example of what anti-Semitism could mean. And we are left with a clear definition of anti-Semitism according to which anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews. Sisters, if I'm telling you that I self-identify as Jew and you have a certain perception of me, here we go. Now, because this definition has been framed as such an intellectual joke, you will see that whenever you find this definition, it is always been accompanied with a list of 11 examples of what anti-Semitism could mean. Within these 11 examples, you will see that 7 out of them are directed directly in relation to the state of Israel. Only 4 examples address Jews as Jews. So we see a definition of anti-Semitism which privileges a national project over the experiences of Jews as Jews. To my understanding, this is quite anti-Semitic definition of anti-Semitism. Just 2 examples that are listed here are the following one. The one example says denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, for example, by claiming that the existence of the State of Israel is a racist endeavor. Sisters, all human rights organizations who have studied the living realities of the people who live between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea come to the same conclusion. At stake is an apartheid state. Apartheid in the sense of racial discrimination, racial separation between Jews and non-Jews, specifically between Jews and Palestinians. Another example says drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis should be understood also as a manifestation of anti-Semitism. What is happening right now in Gaza? Is this a genocide?
Yes.
Hello, anti-Semites. Also, according to the ICJ, by the way, which is a very anti-Semitic organization, as we all know. So we're talking about an anti-Semitic definition of anti-Semitism. Well, the definition of anti-Semitism, the one that is written here, was approved by the plenary of the IHRA in 2016. The 11 examples that were attached to this definition were never discussed, were never democratically approved by the plenary of the IHRA. And yet, wherever you will see the definition of the IHRA, you will see that it's always coming together with those 11 examples. So we have an anti-Semitic definition of anti-Semitism, and we have an anti-democratic definition of anti-Semitism. Shortly after this definition has been introduced, more than 300 scholars signed a scientifically based alternative definition to the IHRA definition under the title the Jerusalem Declaration on Anti-Semitism. Later on, you will hear more about this definition. But I'm mentioning this just to make the point that In 2017, the German government decided to adopt an anti-Semitic and anti-democratic definition of anti-Semitism over a scientifically based definition of anti-Semitism. So the German government is not only anti-Semitic and anti-democratic, but also anti-scientific. This is what I wanted to share with you about the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. Please.
Thank you, Ugi. Before I dive into the slide that you see before you, I just wanted to add a brief to the situation on Germany. One of the reasons why I moved here was because things had been so bad already for well over a year, and I was just really tired of seeing friends beaten up and houses raided and police at universities and everything. It's really heartbreaking and scary. So on that note, this is a little chapter called Semitism and Anti-Semitism, Germany's Long-Term Love Affair with Creative Race Theory. So what's really interesting to me about anti-Semitism is the actual history behind it. So we talk a lot about definitions of anti-Semitism, but we don't talk so much about where did it come from. And we can't talk about anti-Semitism without talking about Semitism. What's interesting in both of these cases is they were developed in Germany. So in the 18th century, in the mid to late 1700s, Semitic theory was developed in Germany by German racial and linguistic scholars. So this Semitic theory and the idea of a Semitic race is directly a through line, Rote Fahne, all the way into Nazi ideology. And with the Semitic race, you also have the Aryan race, Arische. So Semitic theory is quite a disturbing phenomenon. And the idea with Semitic theory is that it used the Old Testament, so the book of Genesis, to stipulate that the descendants of Shem, in Hebrew I believe, Sem in German, would be one facial group that also form one linguistic group. So even with the scholars who were creating this Semitic theory, there were problems with the name, because they realized shortly thereafter that if you actually look at the sons of Shem or Sem in the Old Bible, Old Testament, you would find that some of these people speak different language groups, or in different language groups, and therefore would not fit into a Semitic race. But nonetheless, the theory was still used. So it's just to show that, I think it's a crazy idea to have racial theory in the first place, but even if you were to go with Germany's own racial theory, it in and of itself, it collapses on itself at the beginning. Further on in history, we have this quote here from the Encyclopedia Britannica, because Semitic speaking peoples do not share any traits aside from language, use of the term Semite to refer to a broad range of Semitic speaking peoples has fallen out of favor. So these Semitic languages, as we understand them today, would be Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic, Ethiopic, Ancient Assyrian, among many others. So we see clearly that in the modern day, we are not supposed to scientifically say that there is a Semitic race. And perhaps even the using the word Semitic for languages is problematic given to the anti-scientific background. Interesting how there's a through line of anti-science within German science. So we might ask ourselves, why is it that Jews are referred to Semites. If we're being anti-Semitic, we're being anti-Jewish, so therefore Jews are Semites. What happened to the other Semites? And before I answer that question completely, there was a really interesting piece of research I uncovered. So one of the scholars of Semitic theory, who is actually French, in his inaugural speech, where he was invited to a new professor position, gave some of the following quotes. So at the time, I'll read some of this too. So at the time, there's a clear connection. The Semites are considered Jews and Islamists. I'll read you some of this, and just keep in mind, maybe you guys have heard speech on Islamism. I'll touch back on it. I'm going to read from this. In the present day, the one essential condition for the expansion of European civilization is the destruction of the principle of Shemitic action. Shem, Semitic, it's the same thing. The destruction of the theocratic power of Islamism, and consequently the destruction of Islamism itself. War is unceasing there, war which will only cease when the last son of Ismail shall have died with misery, meaning all Muslim people, or been driven by terror to the depths of the desert. Islamism is the perfect negative spirit of Europe. Islamism is contempt of science, suppression of civil society. It is the frightful weakness of the Semitic spirit, narrowing the mind of man, closing it against every delicate conception, every fine feeling, every rational research. Rational research. This is quite rational. The future, gentlemen, gentle people, then belongs to Europe, and to Europe alone. Europe will subdue the world and will spread over it its religion, which is individual right, liberty, and respect, obviously. The progress of Indo-European nations will consist in separating itself more and more from the Semitic mind. Our religion will retain less and less of Judaism. It will become the religion of the heart, the inmost poetry of each human being. In morality, we shall attain to a delicate nicety unknown to the beings of the old alliance. We shall become more and more Christians. And I think all of us feel a bit more Christian after reading this. This was created in this was spoken in 1862. What I find so fascinating about this is in the German context, we, Jüdische Stimme, are often referred to as Islamists. And much of this on Islamism can be directly transported or is spoken almost word for word within the German state in mainstream media. I'm not so familiar with media here, but I imagine there's a lot of similarities. It's so interesting that Germany, and I think much of the world, has forgotten about Semitism. And here it's spelled out beautifully. If you were to actually be anti-Semitic within this context, you'd also be anti-Islamist and Jewish. They're connected here. And it becomes, within the European context, about a Christian supremacy. And yes, I think I will move on to the next slide. Thank you. What's really interesting is that shortly after the speech is given, so by 1879, the speech was given in 1862, anti-Semitism as a term develops once again within Germany to refer solely to Jewish people. And this was developed by someone called Wilhelm Ma. And he proudly created something called the League of Anti-Semites. So he was loud and proud about his anti-Semitism, and clearly defined his anti-Semitism as anti-Judaism. And Germany has held on to this definition ever since, as well as Israel and much of the world. This was a direct response to Jews finally gaining full citizenship rights in 1869. Jews have been fighting really hard in Germany to get civil and democratic rights, although it wasn't a democracy, but civil rights. And this was sort of this anti-Semitic league was a backlash against this. So here's a German historian, Heinrich, who says, there has always been an abyss between Europeans and Semites. There will always be Jews who are nothing else but German-speaking Orientals. Interesting to bring Orientalism into this, but also interesting that as a historian, Heinrich has forgotten about Semitic languages, I guess, the original theory. Here he's saying that Jews speak German, yet they're still Semites. So there's something very confused about the constant redefining of what anti-Semitism is. And I argue that it's always vague, and it's very often determined by those in power. What was so fascinating is that in doing this research, I came across the actual source, the primary source, of an online scan of this book where Wilhelm Marr first uses the word anti-Semitism to refer only to Jews. And in 1880, in the fourth edition, we have this very fascinating quote. Judaism must be isolated. This can, if we seriously wish, be done in the most peaceful, most legal way. Israel, in this case, this is Israel as in the Jewish nation, not Israel, the nation state, is improved by, or what would be the best improvement, an emigration to Palestine. The socio-political Semitic comedy in the Christian German state must finally come to an end if this Christian German state is not to become a comedy itself. By returning to Christianity, we are not doing it for frivolous fun. We are serious about it. We no longer want to let the Christian state become socially and politically Judaized. What's interesting about this is here we have a proud anti-Semite recommending Palestine as the solution to the Jewish problem. Zionism had not formally been invented yet. The Zionist Congress would be in the latter part of the 1890s. Hetzel hadn't written about Zionism yet, and the Zionist movement itself hadn't finalized the idea of Palestine as being a place for Jews. So this points at an interesting historical fact, which is that the idea that Jews would be sent to Palestine as a solution to Europe's Jewish problem has a long history. Not only that, but in the beginning of the Nazi regime, to a certain extent, there was also Zionism was also seen as one of the possible solutions to the Jewish problem, and it wasn't able to be actualized fast enough. So there were other solutions that we all know about, but it's a really interesting history. So I'll have one more slide here before turning it back over to Udi. On this idea of a sort of proto non-Jewish or Christian Zionism, there's really, really fascinating research. I came across this book by Regina Sharov called Non-Jewish Zionism, Its Roots in Western History. And she theorizes with incredible amounts of evidence that Zionism as we know it was actually started in Europe hundreds and hundreds of years before it was a popular Jewish ideology, let's say. So her book counteracts the widely accepted myth that Western support for Israel is largely due to an influential Jewish minority within Western political systems, especially within the United States. Zionist pressure politics, the Zionist lobby, or the Jewish vote. Jewish vote is also an interesting anti-Jewish catacall, in a way, sometimes, do not account for the substantial non-Jewish support which Zionism has been able to mobilize in the West. The Zionist movement was able to enlist supporters among non-Jews throughout the Western world long before it was able to attract large-scale Jewish support as a result of World War II. The underlying assumptions and main ideas were first conceived and transmitted by non-Jews in various guises, religious, social, economic, and strategic. Here we have Immanuel Kant, many of you might know him, who says, Jews are the Palestinians among us, hundreds of years before Herzl, or at least 100. And here we have Martin Luther, who created the Protestantism, which I believe also shapes much of Swiss culture and Swiss Christianity, one of the sort of fundaments of Swiss and German thought, I would say, and religion. Who prevents the Jews from returning to the land of Judea? Nobody. We shall provide them with all the supplies for their journey, only in order to get rid of them. They are a heavy burden for us, the calamity of our being. It's also interesting that in the US, the pilgrims, so the Puritans who came over as some of the first colonists, also believed in something called Jewish restoration, in which they believed that the Jews would be restored to their homeland of Judea in order for the Christians to be redeemed. This was very popular and widespread, and it helps to explain why the modern US state, I think, has such incredible support for Zionism. And sort of the modern version of this Puritanism is seen in evangelical Christian Zionism, which the next group we'll talk about a little bit more in the context of Switzerland, but within the US it's hugely, hugely popular and dangerous, scary ideology. The basis of which is the Jews will go to Israel, Jesus comes down, 2/3 of the Jews go to hell, 1/3, oh, and there's like a big war, end times, Armageddon, Jesus comes, the Messiah comes, 2/3 of Jews go to hell, 1/3 take Jesus into their heart, and go to heaven. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this brilliant and comprehensive introduction to Zionism and to Semitism and anti-Semitism. I want to talk to you about this person, and that you're all going to see as you go to demonstrate on the...
He's coming on the 18th, at Reset Hub.
All right. So this person, his name is Felix Klein, and his job is the so-called Bundesbeauftragter, or commissioner, for the fight against anti-Semitism and for Jewish life in Germany. And this position has been introduced in 2018, and it followed the Koalitionsvertrag, coalition agreement of the newly formed government back then. And the idea was to introduce a certain commissioner, not only on federal level, but you will find this position also on state level, on municipal level, and even within the executive bodies of the state, for example, within the Berliner Police, and also within political parties who are being represented within the German parliament, within the Bundestag, among others, also within the AfD, within the Alternative for Germany. And very interesting about Felix Klein and other individuals who have this position to basically make politics in the name of Jews is that more often than not, those individuals self-identify in public as Christian, as Protestant, as Evangelist, as Catholic, very diverse group of people who make politics in the name of Jews, for Jews. Can you imagine having a commissioner for queer issues who is not queer? Can you imagine having a commissioner for migrant issues who have no idea what it is like to walk as a migrant person through the white supremacist Federal Republic of Germany? Can you imagine having a commissioner for Jewish life in Germany who is not Jewish? We can imagine, unfortunately, this is our reality. And interestingly, those commissioners for Jewish life are following this anti-Semitic, anti-democratic, anti-scientific definition of anti-Semitism. And if we look at statistics that the state has accumulated about anti-Semitism within the context of Germany, you will see that 90% of anti-Semites, allegedly anti-Semites, are racialized people. In 2017, just to compare, according to the official accounts of the state, more than 94% of all anti-Semitic incidents that were registered were right-wing motivated. So we see that the introduction of the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism has brutal effect on racialized people who now have to carry the burden also of being allegedly anti-Semitic. And also interestingly, that when you look at all those 90% individuals who, 90% of the population of being marked as anti-Semitic, you will see that between 24 and 27% of them are self-identifying Jews who are framed by Aryan supremacists as anti-Semites. And also interestingly to keep in mind is that while the Jewish population of Germany is about 250,000 individuals who live nowadays in Germany. Do you know how many people live in Germany in general? 80 million, something like this. So 250 is roughly put 0.333, something like this, of the entire population. And yet a tiny, please.
Just to quickly interrupt, and this is with the most generous figures, so people who even vaguely identify as Jewish to the most wide range of Jewish identity that's possible.
Thank you for this. Also, because we don't know how many Jews actually live in Germany, because an actual figure does not exist, for the very reason that when these figures did exist, the government knew not only how many Jews live in Germany, but where they live, who live with them, what is their profession, and how to execute them most efficiently. So, keeping in mind that the Jewish population of Germany is a tiny minority, also among other minorities in the state of Germany, in the Federal Republic of Germany, it's quite remarkable that the Jewish subject is made so central to political decision-making. Think, for example, about the following question. How many parliament members sit nowadays in the German parliament, in the Bundestag? Do you have an idea, somebody? 700-something. Yeah, 700-something. 720-something. Do you have an idea how many of these 720-something individuals self-identify as Jew, keeping in mind that they all are very eager to protect Jewish life in Germany? Who would say 100? Who would say 50? Who would say between 10 and 20? Okay. Who would say between 5 and 10? Mm-hmm. Who would say 2? All right. Who would say 1? The truth is that according to the Bundestag, none of the parliament members who sit now in the German parliament self-identify as Jewish. And this is true not only in the current legislation period, but also in the one before that, and the one before that. I did not do further research on this matter, but it perhaps has always been this way. So Jews certainly seldomly get the opportunity to speak up and to report what it is like to be a self-identifying Jew who live in Germany. The only organization who gets the opportunity to speak up in the name of Jews is the so-called Central Council of Jews in Germany. Now, if you look at the website of the Central Council of Jews in Germany, the main page is covered with an Israeli flag. And it's written right next to it, with